All right. Some people survive recovery. Others build a life so meaningful that the service becomes their heartbeat. What if the very act of helping others isn't just something that you do? It's the way you stay free and the way you keep growing. Today, we're talking to someone who lives that truth every single day. Welcome back to the Clean Life Cast, where healing becomes a movement. I'm your host, Mason Anderson, and this is my co-host, Daniel Tapasula. Today, we're honored to have our special guest, Charisse Cole, someone who's been a huge part of my own recovery and a constant source of wisdom and inspiration. Charisse is the case manager at Wasatch Recovery. She nearly finished her Sud-C to become a therapist, and she founded 2%, a nonprofit dedicated to outreach that was one of the earliest parts of my recovery. She's constantly serving others, balancing school, nonprofit work, and recovery with grace and humility. She's been a mentor and a guide to so many. This episode is about living a life of service, how helping others transforms us, keeps us grounded, and turns recovery into a mission. So we're super grateful that you're here.
That was a lot.
Let's
go. That was nice.
It was all truth, though.
I know. I was starting to get a little teary-eyed over here. Whew.
But the truth is like that. I could have went, kept going. You know, all the stuff that you do.
It's a lot different when you hear it from like other people. Oof, oof.
Yeah, it's good though.
Thanks.
Like I like the outreach part. When I was in residential, Charisse was working on at the barn, and my first outreach was in the vans. Everybody had to get in the vans. We went to the block. But we all prepped it in the yoga room. It was like my first act of service at Wasatch. It was so cool.
And that's really cool because that's it was my first too, and it was the first time that I ever like done service work like that, like as a group to go out and try to like serve the community, and it changed my whole perspective on why I started what I did and everything like that. So that's an amazing thing. But what first of all, what is 2%?
So it's a nonprofit that my husband and I have done, like you said, go outreach to unsheltered people. We like to give them hope. We give them food. We want them to know that they're loved and appreciated, and you know that they are very seen. So we give them food, and then if we can, we give them donations, clothes, and stuff like that. The reason we named it 2% is I always get a little choked up because, like, we're the 2%. So 2% is the actual percentage of addicts, specifically meth addicts, that make it out of addiction and stay out.
Really?
Just 2%.
That's amazing.
So
So
that's what it
crazy.
is. Yeah, so we're the 2% right now.
Yeah. Here
you
are.
100% tweaker, 2% survivor.
That's right.
I like that. So dope.
So like what part of your recovery did that come about?
So when I was released from my federal stint, or my federal incarceration, I had to do 6 months of in-home incarceration, and then I was given 200 hours of community service, specifically working with unsheltered addicts. And the judge said, "So that you know where you could have been."
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's crazy.
And so,
Every time I heard you say, sorry, I've never heard that part.
oh, really?
Yeah, I've never heard you say, so the judge,
Yeah.
so the judge made it so you know where you could have been.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, because he was impressed that I was always working, even in my addiction. That he one of the things that he said is he was so impressed with my work history, and he was very shocked that at 35 years old I had didn't have a criminal history, and then all of a sudden there was this big giant charge. So, yeah. But I remember when I was on my in-home incarceration, not to be confused with ankle monitor, I couldn't leave my house for 6 months. I wasn't allowed to. I could only go to MRT therapy, my drug tests. And I lived in Brigham City, and I had to drive to Murray for that. And I kept asking my PO, "Hey, when do I get to start my community service? When do I start my community service?" And him and my judge finally got together a month before I got off of the in-home incarceration and said, "Okay, you can start." And the guy that was the person who was running my MRT class was part of BAM, which is a nonprofit from my friend Rachel Piocioni. I can't, it's Anderson now, actually, is her last name. She got a nice, she just got married. But it was her baby. And Brandon, when he was like, "Hey, you know, I've got this," like, and her whole thing was outreach. So we would get together at the Calvary and make sack lunches. And then I just fell in love with it. And when I tell you, I did all 200 hours in 1 month, making sandwiches, helping get the word out, like, we're gonna go feed unsheltered people. And I just fell in love with it. And that was like, this is what I need to do.
Dude, that's so awesome. That's powerful.
Yeah, it is. I liked it because realizing that it was something that you needed to do, Like, you could have easily not done it, then I would have never been exposed to it at Wasatch.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's so crazy how decisions happen and not realizing how much people you're going to affect on the path. Mm-hmm. And I was definitely one of those that was impressed because, like, I used to go hang around and it's a trip. How many of those people actually have money in their pocket, you know? Mm-hmm. But, like not knowing where to go for help, not knowing that there is help. Mm-hmm. Like, so to be able to go from a spot where you used to kick it to now being light, you know, if I don't know, now bringing help, being somebody that says that you can be, there's a way out, you know?
Yeah.
So thank you for that, for real. That was so sick, like, experiencing that. And I went, I remember the first time I went, I was on blackout and everybody was like, you're on blackout. I was like, no, I'm not. And then we went.
So why do you think that, like, service work is so impactful for people that are early in recovery?
That's a good question. I really think, I mean, first of all, it's one of the steps, right? Like it's huge. But I think it really truly is, like, being able to give back, being in a position where even when you didn't think that you had something to give somebody, like, to be able to hand a sack lunch to somebody and know that you're the reason they get to eat a meal that day is so powerful. And, like, I think that's the point where our brains start to, like, switch over from, like, addict to helper, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Awesome. For sure. I know it helped me. I remember something Todd said to me. He said that if you're feeling some type of way about yourself, go do service and then come back and tell me how you feel. Mm-hmm. I know that every time, and I went like three times, I think, when I was in residential and a bunch when I got to sober living. Every time, like, just like when we start handing it out, even like prepping the sack lunches is, I got goosebumps all over. Like, just prepping it, like, takes me out of my own crap.
Yep.
And like, bringing me, like, joy and having some grace and empathy for these people, like, just puts me out of my own mindset of whatever is going on. And then when we get done, it's an even higher mindset of of this gratitude that, I don't know, just a lot of gratitude from being of service to other people. And I love it. It's so good.
It's almost like an undescribable feeling. Like, you can't pinpoint the word that you want to say for, but look, I know this one too.
Yeah.
It's just so fantastic. Like, there's no word that you can get that is just like, that you can pinpoint as to how you feel when you do it. You know?
That's so true. And I think, like, for myself, it was a lot of, like, gratefulness and humility. And, like, part of me, like, after the fact was like, I had a purpose, even if it was when I was so dark in myself, it was like, I had a purpose for that moment. I was out there doing something that was helping contribute to our community, helping contribute to people in need. And it was like, afterwards, I got that feeling of like, I did a good deed today. You know?
I
was out there showing love. And that's really what I think is on the big scale, what I needed in my life completely all the way around, you know, is to find that space of, like, purpose.
Yeah. I think purpose is the right word for it. Absolutely. Yeah.
And it's dope.
Yeah.
Like, purpose is, I love that word.
Yeah.
It's a new word in my vocabulary, but I love it. And then having passion for the thing you do, you know, like, I don't know. I've never went on one outreach with either of you to where, like, I've seen anybody flexing on the homeless or the less fortunate.
For sure.
Everybody, you know, had humility and was definitely in, I don't know if you want to say it, but like a Christ-like behavior. Like, I'm just here to help. I'm not here to show you I got dope shoes on or my clothes are better than yours. It was all like, it's just one human to another. Here, hope you have a better day, you know?
That reminds me one time. I don't know if you were there with us. We went out. And client, a repeat client that has been through a few times, and he had said, like, this is the one thing that gets me out of my head all the time. And he was wearing, like, Skechers that day, just, like, gray Skechers. And this kid was walking around with no shoes, and he was like, hey, I really like your shoes. And
yeah, Jason.
Took his shoes off and just gave him and did the whole rest of outreach with no shoes on.
That's when he was in House One with me, Jason Morgan. He came running back to our group because he just stopped to talk to this kid, and we just let everybody, you know, because maybe then he's giving words of advice or like telling him where to go. Then he come running back and we just hopped on. I was like, where's your shoes? He was like, bro, did you see that kid? He's walking around with no shoes. And then I was like, what about you? He was like, bro, I got shoes at the house. But that feeling, you know, like why should I have two or three when you got none? Here you go.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, literal shoes off his feet.
That's a beautiful thing for sure.
It's wild. I remember that.
Yeah.
So I'm super grateful that we have your nonprofit for sure, because it did change my life too. But so I want to shift gears a little bit and just find out, like, when did Wasatch, working at Wasatch, become part of your like plan?
So, like I said, I was on the in-home incarceration for 6 months. Now, I'm going to back up the story a little bit. The judge saying that he was so impressed with my work ethics, I thought for sure, like, okay, cool. Like, it's going to be ankle monitor. I can go get a job. Absolutely not. I was at home during the heart of COVID with teenagers. Like, and it was crazy. But so lucky. So lucky. Love you, Hayden and Liam. I love you. I remember like, okay, I had the countdown. I got my ankle monitor on April 7th. I'm getting it off October 7th, right? And so it's coming closer. It's coming closer. And I am calling my PO and he's not answering. He's not answering. And I'm messaging him and I'm like, hey, like, it's coming up. It's coming up. And he goes, we'll schedule a time. Like 4 or 5 days after. I was like, no, sir.
That's not going to work.
No. I'm going to get in my son's Lincoln, like 1991 Lincoln Continental. And I'm going to drive that all the way down to Salt Lake with this ankle monitor and the base. And I'll just bring it to you. No big deal. And so that day when I went and I gave him all the stuff. He asked me, you know, what I was going to do. And I said, I don't know, like, I think maybe working in treatment because, you know, I was doing the outreach and I really loved that. And some of the people that were doing it also worked in treatment. And so I had applied, I went on Indeed and I had applied for like 4 or 5 different treatment centers. And I got a call back from, he doesn't work there anymore. His name was Jake Fisher and he was the facility manager at Wasatch. And he called me in for an interview and I was so excited. And I remember before I went, my mom, she says,
shout out your mom.
I know. She says, you're going to get a lot more yeses or a lot more no's than yeses, you know, because like, again, I never had any type of history in my life. And now all of a sudden I'm literally like on a terrorist watch list, you know, we'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll talk about
this. Yeah. And so I go in for the interview and I nail it. And, you know, all he asked me was like how long sober I was. And I was just over, a year sober because I had obviously the day I got arrested was the last time I used. And then this was, so yeah, I was just over a year sober. And that was the requirement at that time. And I told him, by the way, I did this. And he goes, it's a drug charge. No big deal. You know? And he didn't look at me like I was some piece of crap because yeah. And I got hired on as a part-time line staff. So 2020.
Yep. So I just had a couple questions on what you just said. Mm-hmm. Okay. You went through all that and then you wanted to work in recovery.
Mm-hmm.
But you also didn't go through recovery.
Mm-mm.
How many years of addiction before that?
5.
Okay, 5 years of addiction.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get off? Like, how did you stop? Oh, sorry, okay. Everybody else hears it.
So, you're going to need to cry.
That's what we're here for.
Okay, so I have this quote right here. It's my favorite quote. We all know I'm a quote person. I love quotes.
I'm saying.
And it says, every life has its waking moment. My husband was actually in prison before we were married, and he was reading a magazine, and he found it, and he was like, he told me that he cut it out and he put my picture around it, you know.
Her husband's like, name is Wayne. Shout out to Wayne.
So that it just kind of stuck with me. And I think back at my life and I think of all these times that were like life waking moments. There's not just one, right?
Yeah.
And so my first one obviously was probably the day I became a mom. So my oldest son Hayden, he was born almost 21 years ago. Mm. And that facial expression was because that reminded me of how old I was.
That's what kids do.
I know. Yeah. I know. And so, you know, he was my first waking moment. So I get arrested for, I guess, people who have never heard my story. I strapped myself with a large amount of drugs and I walked across the U.S.-Mexican border and I got caught. So went to prison for that. And when I was finally in a space that I could call people, I tried to call Hayden, my oldest son, for every single day. And it was day 90 something. It was his 15th birthday that he finally answered the phone. And now at this point, like, I want you to know, being stripped down at the border, having all these drugs on me, looking at a minimum mandatory 10 to life sentence, like none of that had humbled me at all. You know, it hadn't. Like, I thought, okay, I don't want to maybe do this life. But I call my son that day and he tells me all about his birthday and how fantastic it was. And I was like, oh, that's great. Do you think you can send me some pictures? And the next sentence out of his mouth, like it has stuck with me. And that was the moment that my life was like, you have to change. You can't do this anymore. And he asked me, he said, okay, what's your U.S. Marshal Federal inmate number? And like my heart sunk and ugh.
Yeah.
It still sinks because like he was the first love of my life. I gave life to him and I wronged him so terribly that in that moment on his 15th birthday, I wasn't his mom. I was a number. Whew.
Yeah.
So that was my moment. And from that moment, like, I made amends. I did the 12 steps in prison. I didn't even know that I was doing the 12 steps. You know, like I wrote my mom and dad a 10-page front and back letter, and I was indigent. So when I say front and back, I mean a pencil this big. I have big hands. A pencil this big.
Yeah, bro. I'm no
and it was the white. It was white paper.
Yeah.
Right.
No and lines.
No lines. And so I'm trying to like front and back, and I'm like, look, this is who I am. This is what I did. This is why I did it. Here's the marriage that I was in that just completely broke me. That like. I didn't tell anybody about because I was afraid to. And I asked for forgiveness, and I just knowing like, okay, like if they don't give it to me, I deserve that, you know? And so that was my moment that I was just like, and I haven't looked back. And to me, like it, I don't ever want to get high again. You know, it's just not for me.
And then you wanted to work in recovery because of that.
Mm-hmm.
That's so yep. cool.
You said something about like you didn't go through recovery. Do you mean like treatment?
Yeah,
treatment.
Man, recovery.
Yeah, you're working in recovery, yeah. but you didn't do treatment for yourself.
Right.
When your son asked for your number, was the moment that kicked off your journey through recovery. Yep.
Did you even get a therapist or anything?
Well, yeah, because I went through MRT when I got out, so I was mandated to do MRT. And do you have my nose is going to run everywhere because I just turned a little bit. Thanks, Daniel. Ask the question again. Sorry, it was.
I just asked about if you ever got a therapist.
No, yeah, I did. So like I said, I went through MRT, and that was kind of like the first like little bit of therapy. And they gave me a therapist. I went through JSS, Judicial Supervision Services, such an amazing company. And they thank you gave me a therapist whose name happens to be Wendy, not to be confused with the Wendy we always talk about.
I heard that.
But her name was Wendy, and she was so good, so fantastic. She best for me, at least best therapist, because she helped me through trauma work. She helped me through to get past like all these things that I blamed myself for that wasn't my fault, and was able to help me just see past everything. So.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So yes, I did. Got a great therapist.
And so you did your therapy, you did your MRT, you did all that, and then you ended up getting the job at Wasatch as part-time staff. And then how did it ramp up to where you do everything?
Yeah, wait. What was your first job? I've never found
out. It was a graveyard line staff.
Oh yeah, graveyard. That's right.
Great part-time graveyard line staff. And again, Onward Heights. I'm living in Brigham City. And at this point, I had this little car. I named her the Little Red Ratchet because she was like, she was like this little red Hyundai accent or something. And she was like a 2002. She had like 400,000 miles on her. Yeah. Oh, but she got me everywhere. She did the job. She got me where I needed to go. So, and I have graveyard, right? Living in Brigham City. And so I would drive down. And I remember when I first started, I was like, okay, it's not a lot of money, but it's okay. Like it's more money than I'm making now. And I remember Jake said, don't worry, if you want more hours, people will call in. And I'm like, okay, you know, so I'm on the line, and I'm looking for people, and I'm covering every shift I can. And it got to the point probably 3 or 4 months into me working there. I was promoted to a lead because I was taking on I was taking on everything. Like I was working every graveyard I could, and the people on swing shift, like, were calling out. And so I started taking their swing shifts, you know. And so there was a point that I worked every single day for a year and a half for 16 hours a day.
Jeez.
Just from 4 p.m. Yeah. until 9 a.m. And I just worked it. And I, like, I would have to leave sometimes, like, take my son. I remember I had moved to West Jordan eventually because I was able to save money and I was doing all these things. And my son, and we shared a car. And so my son needed to get to school and I couldn't leave. So I called him an Uber. My son is 6'4" 6'5".
Yeah, he's a
big and boy. A Juke shows up to take my kid to school. But so I did have to leave. You know, sometimes I had to leave to take care of that. But yeah, I just busted my butt and busted my butt and busted my butt. And I was so willing to learn everything. I just wanted to learn everything. And so I would always ask, like, is there anything I could do? Is there anything I can do? What can you teach me today? You know? I remember when Jake put his resignation in, he took me aside, and nobody knows the facility manager. Nobody knows this until now. He took me aside and told me, hey, just so you know, like I asked for you to take my position. And I was like, I was so honored because like the one person other than my parents, like when I got out, that like didn't look at me like I was that piece of shit felon. Right. Yeah. And like he believed in me. And so, yeah, like I took it and I ran with it. I did. And then I learned how to do Vivitrol. And so I'm the only one that does Vivitrol there. And I just kept working and kept working and kept working. And then they gave me another promotion. And here I am, hey, director of outpatient operations.
Doing all the things.
All the things.
Constantly busy. Uh-huh. Yeah. And then you add school into the mix.
Oh, my gosh. Don't remind me.
Yeah. The busiest lady I know. Like, been working all day, go to school, and was doing internship on the side.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Like, how you do that?
And still they're not reaching.
And still have time to do
all. Yeah. And my husband's still married to me.
Yeah. Yes.
He's a lucky one.
I know.
He's a lucky one.
I know. He's a pretty great guy.
Yeah,
he's a pretty hot landscaper for sure.
I saw him at work today.
Too. I know, me too.
So when do you get out of school?
May. I graduate May 7th, I believe. May 7th or May 14th.
So you did your internship already?
Yes and no. Yes, I did. Because I'm glad you bring this up because this is a part of like, you say I'm busy. I'm always going. And so I had done my internship at a place called Collective Recovery. Shout out to Collective. That's where my husband actually went to treatment. And anyway, so I did my internship there and I thought to myself, like, why do my internship in this semester when I've still got two more to go? Like, I'll spread it out. Right. And so I had talked to Corey and I had talked to Wendy and we had worked it out that, okay, like I'm going to slow down my internship at Collective a little bit and I'm just going to do the rest of my internship at Wasatch. Well, about a week into the semester, I was told that unfortunately, it could have caused dual relationships. You know what a dual relationship is.
Katie, my homie Katie told me.
Yep. And so it could have caused dual relationships because I'm over the sober living. And so it would be really hard to be in a group with people that I collect money from for sober living payments. So, anyways, I was told no. And so I took that as a moment of like, I was kind of really frustrated at first about it. But then I took that as girl, the universe is telling you to slow the hell down. You know, and so I decided, I'm going to drop that class. I'm going to drop the internship this semester and I'm just going to focus on the three electives that I have and like just have a nightlife with like my husband and my mom and my brother and my kids and just like be able to get off work and go home and be home.
For you.
And
so,
thank you. Me too. Last night, Wayne and I made dinner together for the first time in like a year, you guys. Like, I mean, we eat dinner all the time, obviously, but like,
let's sit down and actually cook it is a different thing.
Yeah, like my mom got to just not do anything, you know, which was fantastic. And we were able to just cook dinner and have a good time and joke and laugh and eat. And it was, and that was the moment that I was like, yeah, that's the right decision. It was the right decision to slow down.
Go ahead.
Sometimes people get caught up in just chasing and chasing and chasing. I remember listening to, I knew his name, but when I started talking, my mind went blank. But on YouTube, it's called The Illusion of Time.
Mm-hmm.
And Alan Watts talks about the illusion of time. And he says, like let's call it the bag. You focus on chasing the bag and chasing the bag. And your whole life, you chase the bag. When you do get that bag, there's a prettier bag ahead of it.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he calls it an illusion because you're so focused on this thing that you'll never get. Meanwhile, missing all these things like cooking dinner, something so simple as that, that's right in front of you the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, tunnel vision on just a bag. And I love that because, like, I want to do a bunch of stuff, but I also want to appreciate, I'm trying to figure out how to do more stuff, but still not lose focus on the things right in front of me, like friends like you guys, and not miss out on any chance we get to kick it. You know what I mean? Like, so that's what we talked about this on Monday or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's the thought that came through my mind was it's good that you slow down. Now you get to spend some time and you get that time where you have to be busy and get caught up and finish school to finish whatever you're going to, you're searching, you know, but I'm glad you found some balance and some peace with your choice of slowing down.
Me too. I mean, like I said, I was frustrated at first, but I'm glad that it happened how it happened. And it was just like, it's okay. You know, like it's just okay. And of course, there's going to be other things that are going to fill up our time, right? It's not necessarily going to be school or an internship, but it's going to be things like we're going to finish our basement. You know, we're going to do all these other things, but at least it's time that we get to spend together and make those memories together rather than, you know, me like downstairs in the basement on Zoom because I'm like with a client, you know,
for sure.
But so
So I think that's huge. And I love that, like, you're finding that balance because you deserve it.
Thank
more
you.
Than anybody.
Thank
you. You do put in the work. So it's like, you deserve some time to, like, do some self-care and self-love and be with your family and be doing those type of things, because it is just as important.
Yeah,
and it's also going to be what fuels you mm-hmm. in that future time. When you mm-hmm. do go back to school, you're going to feel more rejuvenated.
Yeah. And yeah. Oh, and I'm still in school. I'm just only like...
You just... cut some class.
Yeah, I cut the one class, which makes it so that I'm not doing an internship. So that actually, like, I was planning on adding an additional 15 to 20 hours a week at Wasatch on top of what I already work at Wasatch.
I don't think that's possible.
Like, that's a no. Yeah.
And she did it last semester.
I did, but yeah. But it was somewhere else. And so, yeah, I cut that class. And so now I'm doing, like, geology 10-10, photography and social work 10-10, because apparently you need that to be a social worker. So
that makes
but
a little sense.
Yeah, but yeah, it's all, yeah, it's all online though. And so...
So your photography class, what's that about?
It's not that it's difficult. Like, I love capturing things in the moment, right? And so, like, tomorrow I'm actually going to softball and I'm just going to, like, take pictures of, like, the park and stuff like that. But it's learning the camera, and bless my mom, she has this really fantastic Nikon. And I think I might be a Canon girl because Canons are, like, much more beginner user friendly. And yeah, and it's this, it's anyways, it's fun. It really is fun. And my Aunt Wendy, another Wendy.
All the two Wendy's.
I know. They're fantastic. She was so kind to come over and help me with my homework last night. You know,
that's
like
cool.
things that would not be happening if I was doing my internship. Yeah. You know, I might be like failing the photography class instead of acing the photography class.
Yeah, so. With the help of your aunt. Do you see your aunt a lot?
I mean, she doesn't live far from me, but I see her when, like, they have their girls brunches, I think, which is like,
but
you know.
This is another excuse for you to make connection with her again.
Yeah, exactly.
Over something way different from girls night out, you know?
Yeah.
Now this is really just you and her.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's really fun.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
What other ways are you doing, like, self-care?
Oh, well, I learned how to do my own nails.
Let's go.
Petties. Mm-hmm.
They look great.
Well, I do petties sometimes. I want to go more often, but...
No, like, do you do your own?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No.
I know I got invited last time, but I was doing something.
You get invited every time, Daniel.
Yeah, I know. And it was just, like, a couple weeks ago.
I got invited to Sandy's birthday, and I was like, I don't think...
Oh, yeah, another one. Yeah.
No, I wanted to go.
I was so busy that day.
Yeah,
but how important is self-care to you?
Oh,
because you just went through this busy semester. Mm-hmm. Self-care is...
It's so important. Yeah. Like, it is important. And again, back to dropping the class, I think that was, like, the universe saying, go take care of yourself, you know? Like, and self-care isn't just putting mascara on your face and getting your toes and your nails did and your hair did. Obviously, we haven't done on a hair in a while. But, I mean, it's more than just that, right? Like, it's your sleep hygiene, it's your food, it's everything that you do. And so, you know, I'm very blessed right now that my husband and I live at my parents' house, and my mother is, like, the queen of all cooks. And so, like, I get to, like, self-care with, like, yummy food, and I love food. And so, and I know we made ribs last night. I know.
No, but self-care is all those physical things, mm-hmm. but it also can be internal things, mm-hmm. which goes back to you slowing down, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
because all this schoolwork, it builds up mentally, you know, and it could put you under easy stress because mm-hmm. you're doing a full-time job, a full day of school plus mm-hmm. internship,
mm-hmm.
and it could mess with the mental a lot. Which,
well, yeah, and being in groups. Yeah. With
hearing heavy stuff,
heavy stuff. And then, like, and I had, like, my very first client last semester, like, that was just my client. And so, like, yeah, it is mentally exhausting.
Yeah.
This type of job.
So what are things that you do for yourself mentally for self-care?
Oh, so blessed to have a family cabin where there is no cell phone service.
One day we'll go to the cabin.
It's a beautiful place. It's where my husband and I actually went on our honeymoon last year. And it was just to disconnect from the whole world.
No cell service, right?
None. Yeah. No cell service until you, like, hit the city. And then it's crazy at that point. But yeah, it's nice that we just go sit on the lake, or we literally sit on the porch and watch the Blue Jays eat the peanuts that we've put out for them.
Let's go.
And it's just, like, to disconnect from the whole world and just to be with the people that I love more than life itself is that's it right there.
Yeah, the mental release, right?
Yeah, that's it.
Make weird observations, like looking up at the roof and finding out they only use two nails.
Two nails! It wasn't the roof. It was the board. Yeah, it was the what was it called?
The support beam, right?
Yeah, the support beam. Yep. And they only used 2 nails when they should have used 8 nails.
Yeah.
We learned all about it.
But that's pretty good to be able to have something like that, to be able to go and decompress or whatever you want to call it, and release all this stuff that's weighing heavy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I love that for you.
Thank you.
So dope.
Me too.
Yeah.
What about, like, your support network or your network of friends?
Well, they're fantastic. So, obviously, huge shout out to my whole family because, like, I honestly look back, even my husband, like, I look back 6 years ago and there was, like, almost no communication, you know?
Between you two?
Between, like, my mom, my dad, me, my kids.
Okay.
I mean, there was communication between me and my kids always, but it was just like, I was there, but only physically, right? Like, I was not there mentally. I was not there emotionally. Like, I couldn't be there emotionally for myself, so let alone for them. But yeah, I mean, I wasn't allowed in my mom's house. I live there now. I wasn't allowed at the family cabin. I wasn't allowed at my grandparents' house. Like, I was not a very nice girl. And so now to have them be my biggest cheerleaders, you know, like, is just, it's incredible. Mind-blowing, actually, is what it is. But yeah, there was a time when I first got arrested that, like, Wayne and I didn't talk, because I think there was a part of him that, and I could be completely wrong, but this is my assumption, is that, you know, he was still out running amok and I wasn't. And I don't think that at that point, I think at that point he knew that I was done, even before I knew that I was done, and he didn't want to, like, taint that.
Yeah, so. That makes a lot of sense.
But yeah, he is absolutely my 100 biggest, hugest cheerleader. Like, he probably rolls his eyes at all my crazy ideas, like, hey, let's start a nonprofit and feed homeless people once a month. But, you know, he does it with a smile on his face and he supports it all. And then when I decide, you know, I think I'm going to go to school, and he's like, okay, let's go. You know, like, he is just there to just support me all around anything I do. I decided to go on my weight loss journey, and he's like, you know, like, here's a Peloton, honey, let's go, you know? And so I think of all of it, of course, he's like, he's the beacon of all of my support. And then my kids and my kids' dad, like, I say that and a lot of people are like, you're what? Yeah. My kids' dad is my best friend. He's been my best friend since I was 18 years old, and he has seen me at my worst and he has seen me at my best. And he did family night with me last time.
Oh, I wasn't there. Yeah. But I've met him.
Yeah. I met him that night.
Okay. Yep. Him and my son and my mom and my husband, they all did family night with me. And it was.
Let's talk about what that is.
Family night?
Yeah. Tell these guys.
Okay. So family night every Tuesday at Wasatch, our residential clients have the opportunity to have their families, or two or three family members.
There's a limit.
Yeah, there is a limit.
How much? And they said, there's a limit.
Not for Daniel. I think it's two or three. They can have two or three of their family members. They have to be over 16, because sometimes some content gets talked about. And most of the people on the clinical team, including myself, we're on a rotation. And so we kind of explain what Wasatch is, what we do, how addiction works, how you can support your family member, and really how the addict can support their family member in, you know, that's my biggest one, is like, not only forgiving your loved one in recovery, but like, give yourself.
Yeah. And so, that's really amazing. And then Charisse brings her family, and they have a good lesson that they talk about. Yeah. It's just, it hits hard. It's really amazing. So.
Mm-hmm. The little sticky note from my mom.
Yeah. That's
that
awesome.
One hits hard.
Your mom's so cool. I really do love your mom. She's another one that's like a real support.
Yeah. Yeah.
The first time I met her was after one of the outreaches we all went and ate at.
Oh, Denny's.
Yeah,
D's on 21st.
One of them. Whichever one has lumberjack breakfast. Yeah.
On 21st. Yeah. In Sugar House.
Oh, yeah. And she was just clowning. I was like, who is this lady? This is my homie right here. Like, I thought Charisse was bad. Now I know where she get it from. She's
hood knows hood. Hood knows hood.
Oh, yeah. No, she's cool.
And speaking of Wayne, too, like, we're getting Wayne on here in a couple of weeks. He's going to come through and we'll get inside the story.
And in fairness to Wayne, like, I know he's your beacon, but you're also his.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, I see when you guys are around each other, it's so nice.
Thanks.
Like, he might roll his eyes, but damn, he never.
I don't think he really does roll his eyes.
Even if he did, right? Even if he did, there's no doubt that he's gonna support you.
Oh yeah, 100%. 100%. And he has told me, and And he even shows me, like, even if, like, say Mason and I are in an argument about something and, like, Wayne knows I'm wrong, like, he's going to let you know that you're wrong.
Yeah.
And then we're going to go in private and he's going to be like, look, I'm just going to let you know.
Yeah.
What you said was probably not right.
Yeah.
But I had your back the whole time.
Yeah.
You know?
For sure.
And he will. He would move mountains for me. He would.
Yeah.
I am so lucky to have fallen in love with him. And, like, I told Dee this a few weeks ago to like her love story, right? Like, it's so cool to like watch it from afar because I lived it, right? Like, I fell in love with Wayne in our addiction. Yeah. And I fell in love with Wayne in a very dark part of his life. Like, dark part of mine, but super, super dark part of his life 10 years ago. And we were able to like somehow make it through an addiction together and then got out. And there was fear that like, what if we don't love each other?
Yeah.
Like, what if we don't love the sober us? And I remember when we were using, I would be like, man, if you only knew me sober, like, you know, because we get in fights, because that's what you do when you're high. You just get in stupid, stupid fights. And I would just be like, I wish you knew me when I was sober. I wish you knew, you know, like you would love me if I was sober. But he loved me then.
Yeah.
And then to come out of our addiction and to just fall in love with each other all over again.
But that's crazy. So we're talking about that in the office too. Mm-hmm. It's like 51st dates, right?
Yep.
Like
you love
this person. And then because you both of you are different people outside of your addiction. Mm-hmm. Like he loved you as an addict and you towards him, you know. Mm-hmm. But then when you both came out, it could have easily been like, I don't think I love this person,
right?
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Which is crazy that you guys still had the same love for mm-hmm. each other, only mm-hmm. a healthier version mm-hmm. of it.
Healthier, stronger, like I dare say unbreakable, honestly. Yeah. Like it's just there's it. And I love that I get to fall in love with him every single day for something new. Like I will walk in my office and he is so adorable. Like I'm a sticky note queen, right? I've got sticky notes all over and they're color coded and like however they go. And he knows, maybe he doesn't know, but like if it's on this side of my computer, like it's important, right? And he'll come into my office when I'm not even there and he'll write me little notes on my sticky notes and put it right there.
Yeah, on the important side.
On the important side. And so, and I never throw them away. I just keep them over there on the important side, you know, to like, to remind me, like, this is why we're doing this.
That's so cool. Right on. I love that so much.
Me too.
Cool. It's so cool to watch. I don't know. Like, just seeing you go from where you was at for the little bit that I knew to mm-hmm. get to where you are now. And finding out, like, hearing your story for the first time, I was like, you came and shared it when I was in house one
mm-hmm.
and you kept shaking your neck at everybody. And I was like, I'm getting seasick. No,
like, shaking your neck.
Yeah, bro. Like she was like, when she meant something, it was like, okay. And then we went overtime and she was like, I know it's 4 o'clock, but we're going overtime and just kept telling her story. But it was dope to watch. Like, you're definitely somebody I look up to, aspire to be like,
thank you.
That anything it takes attitude, you know, mm-hmm. but also still have time to give back,
mm-hmm.
you know, like all qualities that I admire in you.
Thank you.
For sure.
Thank you.
You know, like do your thing, but don't forget, mm-hmm. like, don't forget where you came from
right.
and go mm-hmm. help people that's mm-hmm. behind you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love that.
One thing that I don't know why that reminds me, but like even in my addiction or before my addiction, like I've always been that person. Like I want to give back. Like I have been so blessed my whole life. My parents were not like filthy rich by any means. You know, like my parents are very smart. They lived within their means. You know, like I got like socks, underwear, outfit, and maybe a toy for Christmas. You know, like it was nothing extravagant, right?
Yeah.
But I've always been that person, like, I felt rich, right? Like, and not monetarily rich. I just felt rich. Like, I felt like I have always had the world, right? And so I've always been the person, like, if I see somebody struggling, I'll give them money, right?
Yeah.
And my mom hated that. She absolutely hated that. And so then my mom started coming and doing this with me, right? She started coming and doing outreach. And I think she kind of started seeing. And I also think when she realized, or when she accepted that I was a drug addict, like that changed her whole world, right?
For sure.
And so now in my mom's center console of her car, she has $1 bills.
Yep.
So that when she's driving and there's somebody, you know, that needs like a meal or something, she just gives them money.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Same.
And so, and I think like, I appreciate the fact that like, I'm able to give my mom lessons in life and she is so willing to accept those lessons, you know?
That's so cool.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
That's full circle.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I love it.
She went from learning something from you, but before that, she called you a shit turd on the phone.
Oh my gosh, you know, that was so
in group. Bro. Charisse was running our group, and she was like, "You guys want to know what my mom thinks? Here you go." Put it on.
Oh yeah, it was a good psych ed that day, because it was about like the truth, like what your family thinks of you, like, and the truth sometimes is hard to hear. And so I called my son,
but it just came up. It just came up like, "Oh yeah, yeah. You guys want to know what my family thinks of me? Here." Her son's working at KFC that time. Son, do you trust me? Oh,
yeah.
Do you trust me? And he goes.
He goes, yep.
Like
without a doubt.
It was so dope. Like understanding where she came from.
I said, did you used to trust me? And he goes, nope.
But then like this goes from a guy that you didn't show up for his doctor's appointment.
Right. When he had his appendectomy. Yeah.
This is the guy that there was no pause. Do you trust me? Yep. You know what I mean? There was no thinking. There was no. And then she called her mom and did the same thing. Like. On the spot, no, mom, and then said something to her, and she was like, "Yeah, because you're a shit turd or something like that." Yeah, bro, and everybody in our group started rolling, bro.
And my mom goes, "Oh my goodness, am I on speakerphone?"
Yep, that's cool.
But it was cool because, like,
it's the raw truth.
I love you now, but the reason why I didn't trust you before because you were that.
Yeah.
And it was dope to see.
Yeah.
But that for somebody like me sitting in a group who had severed. Ties, you know, it was dope to hear because it gave me hope that the people that I burned the bridges between me and them, I might be able to take that burnt wood and still form some kind of a bridge to start walking over, you know?
Yeah. And it did. I got to be witness to when that day happened for you.
Yeah.
I get so choked up about it. Like, I'm going to talk about it.
Go ahead. I'm crying already.
So Daniel was really, really worried about his relationship with his daughter. He just adores her. And like, obviously, that's his world, right? And she didn't talk to him for a long time for obvious reasons.
Yep.
You know, he severed those ties. He screwed up. And on his birthday, like he walked into the building and I'm in the kitchen and he walked in and he showed me his phone and all it said was, "Happy birthday, Dad." And it was like, I think that was like your life waking moment. Like, you guys, I don't remember what episode it was because I've watched all your episodes. Talking about like the light coming on, right? Like that was the moment that like I watched your light come on and it was just like so powerful.
Ugh. There was no, I love you or I miss you.
Just
happy birthday, Dad. And I was like showing everybody when to go. I was like, look, you guys were right. Work on me.
Yep.
Like, but you know, like having those, like hearing people tell their story and watching the connection come back was like, man, I want to put bridges.
Yeah.
You know, but hearing those, like, even if it was just a spark, it made some hope, you know? And then, like, following the path that was laid before me and seeing those hopes become reality was so powerful. That's why I was crying. I was like, bro, I don't know why, but these things are working, you know? Like, it felt so good. But
I went and spoke the other day at Corner Canyon. Yeah. And a girl had asked me, like, how did you know this is the path that you wanted to take, you know? And I told her, as cliche and as dumb as this may sound, I just did the next right thing and it just laid itself in front of me.
Yeah.
Like awesome. It just is. So.
Yeah. And it sounds like a cliche, but man, it's like you do the next right thing and tell me what happened.
Right.
You know, like I've been walking that path for a minute and I love me. I love the people around me. I love everything that I do. Nothing that I do now, I said it a bunch of times before, relates to anything I've done in the past. And I love, I just love it. Like everything. I was sitting a couple of days ago in front of house one working and one of the clients came out and I was just smiling. My phone's in my pocket and I'm just smiling, looking out the backyard.
Yeah.
And they walked up by me and I see them do that. Like, look at me and they go, "What are you smiling about?" And I look at them and I was like, "All of it, bro." Like all of
what
it.
What is
like,
not to smile?
Like all of it.
Yeah.
Like, look at this.
Yeah.
Like, look at it. Can you just feel that? Like, I feel good about me.
That's like such a Todd moment, you know? Yeah. Like that was like the miracle moment that he talks about. Like, look at the sun. It's a miracle.
Everything we have right there
is a miracle.
What is there to be?
Blessing.
Yeah, for sure.
A lot of them.
It's beautiful. Shout out your outreach. Isn't it coming up?
On Saturday. Yeah.
This Saturday.
On Saturday at 11 a.m. We're going to make 150 sack lunches. We got a lot of donations. My husband and I even went through our clothes and I donated 3 items to the clothes pile. His clothes pile that like is huge. I donated 3 items. So I was feeling pretty good about that.
Progress, not perfection.
That's right. Progress, not perfection. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I donated the 3 things and I may have went and bought more hoodies. Not bought. I went and got more hoodies. So it's, you know.
Yeah, there's gonna
I'm
be
working
lot,
on it.
a lot of donations coming up in these next couple
Yeah.
of months, so we can distribute them however need
Heck yeah.
be.
Heck yeah.
And like a lot of female clothes.
Oh, good. Good. Well, that's usually what I get is a lot of female clothes.
Yeah, that's hard.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, I'm thinking about just taking them to like the women and children's.
Oh, yeah.
And that's probably a good place to. And I know the Odyssey also takes a lot of donations. So.
Yeah, because they got the family center and stuff.
As a network and as a team, we'll be able to figure this out.
Heck yeah, we will. Heck yeah, we will. There will be clothed, fed people.
That's right.
Absolutely.
I'm super grateful that you came for real.
Yeah,
this has been
I'm
awesome.
Glad. I'm glad you guys had me.
This has been.
We're gonna have to do it again.
So
yeah, because there's more to the story.
Yeah, and we didn't even get to the story part.
No.
Yeah, but wherever we ended up was so powerful.
Yeah,
I felt like this whole conversation was so good.
It was good. When you cry, you know that's a good. You know,
good energy.
Yeah.
All right. So service isn't just something that you add to your busy life. It's a way of living, a path that deepens freedom, keeps you grounded, and changes the world around you. Thank you for showing up and showing us what it means to live up service and to be there for people. Like, it's amazing. And without you, I wouldn't be me. I guarantee you that, you know.
Thank you.
Truly. Since
okay,
I've
stop,
come
Chris.
Here, since the day I met you, I've always looked up to you and like all the mornings of being in your office, just chit chatting away and all the times that like you've given me direction and hope. And like when I needed advice or insights, you're always there for me. And it just means the world to me. I love you with all my heart, for real.
I love you
too, Sharice. Thanks for coming. And I feel the same way about Miss. And you're definitely one of the key points in my life to be able to be who I am today.
Thanks.
And I appreciate you
so
much.
I just want to say one more thing. Today in group, you know, I opened it up and my feeling was like excitement, you know, and they asked why. And I told them, because it gets me on this podcast today. And you know, they're just clients. They're like, oh, that's cool, you know. And I'm like, no, like, you guys don't get it. Like to be able to see and watch this, like, I've watched every episode. And to it's like watching my kids walk for the first time. You guys, like, it is so amazing and so cool. And I feel so blessed to, like, I tell you guys this all the time, like, to have the front row seat to your guys' journey is like, they pay me for this, you know, like, I'm mind blown that this is my life and I would not trade it for the world.
Same.
Well, that's so much.
Yeah, that's it.
Yep. Love you, Sharice.
Love you.
I started using your line too.
What one?
I get the front row seat.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Front row.
To watch people change.
Love you guys.
Love you guys.